Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The perfect hire can have an impact on your business for years to come. So when you need to find that next person to help grow your business, LinkedIn Jobs will match the right talent with your open role fast. LinkedIn has over 675 million members worldwide. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with the hard and soft skills you're looking for so you can hire the right person fast. Things like collaboration, creativity, adaptability. LinkedIn looks beyond the work skills and puts your job post in front of qualified candidates who match your business requirements perfectly. That's how LinkedIn makes sure your job post is seen by the people you want to hire, people with the skills, qualifications, and other interests that will help your business grow. It's no wonder a person is hired every 8 seconds on LinkedIn, and why companies rated LinkedIn Jobs the number one hiring platform for delivering quality hires. Find the right person for your business today with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/team. Again, that's linkedin.com/team and get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. All right, everybody, welcome to a special edition of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. So me and Andrew got super excited, like the rest of you, watching Saints Falcons from 2006 on ESPN last night. And Andrew said, look, I'm going to track down Jonathan Goodwin and Mike Carney, and I'm just going to text them until they agree to come on because they don't have anywhere to go and they don't have anything to do. And they're going to come on and talk about 2006. I said, Andrew, go for it. And sure enough, Jonathan Goodwin is joining us now. Jonathan, before we get to 2006 and your memories of that, how are you surviving being on lockdown in your house?
It's definitely an experience I thought I would never experience. But, you know, I keep telling myself, things could be much worse. I feel like I'm blessed to be able to, you know, to be here with my family, my three boys, my daughter and my wife. And, you know, we're getting through, you know. We're anxiously awaiting, you know, for things to get back to normal. But, you know, never in a million years I would think in the past, 27 days, the only place I've been is the grocery store. I would have never imagined that. But like I said, things could be worse. So that's what I keep trying to tell myself every time I want to go crazy.
Well, yeah, my son is 9 and my daughter's 6. And, you know, they're starting to get into activities, Jonathan. And, you know, a lot of times my friends that don't have kids ask me what it's like. And I say, you know, at this stage of parenthood, it's like being an unpaid Uber driver is basically parenthood. And but you've got three very active boys, especially, and I know they're really in the sport. So I asked you before we came on, but instead of being an unpaid Uber driver, are you now more just like an unpaid trainer?
Yeah, the boys have definitely found another way to keep me working. You know, like you said, all three of them are very active in sports. So usually in my house, almost every day of the week, there's a kid's sport. Somebody has to go to practice or a game or something. And now, since, you know, they can't have those games or practices, they always coming to me, Dad, take us outside and work us out. Dad, I want to go run a mile, which I can't run a mile, so I'm definitely not doing that. But, you know, they've helped me, work on my coaching skills, because usually just about every day they want to go in the backyard and have me put them through some drills. They say we want some NFL drills and things like that. And, you know, my kids, my oldest is a receiver and a defensive back, and my 11-year-old played running back and linebacker this year. And, you know, I didn't play those positions. So usually, you know, I have to get creative. And, you know, when I'm coaching them during the season, the only thing I can tell them is don't be soft.
Well, I think you're selling yourself a little short, because I know that first Saints fans may not know this, but in your retirement, you may have been an offensive lineman and a center, and you have to have a certain size to be that position. But now you look more like a running back or maybe a small tight end. Getting into this game, I wanted to ask you, like, even leading up to this game before that, kind of going through free agency, just why would you come to New Orleans at the time that you did in 2006? You know, Katrina had happened and it was hard to find a home, you know, and the everything was destroyed. And so, I mean, that free agency class was incredible. I mean, you had Drew, you had Fujita, you had you, but why just kind of talk maybe a little bit about like what started the decision to come to New Orleans?
Well, Doug Marrone was my offensive line coach with the Jets. You know, Doug, that offseason, came to New Orleans to be the OC and the offensive line coach. So originally, you know, I flew up and had a meeting with the Jets because we were coming off of a lockout that year. That was the year of the owners locked us out for like a week. So I had that meeting, you know, went up there and, you know, I felt like, you know, that wasn't the place for me anymore. And then I had a visit set up with the Washington Redskins. And, then I get a call from Doug and, Terry Malone, who was the, tight ends coach with, Coach Payton's initial staff. And, Terry was my offensive line coach at Michigan. So they told me they wanted me to come in for a visit, and they actually scheduled my visit, They kind of jumped in front of the Redskins visit when they found out I had a visit with the Redskins. So I came down, you know, I got to see some of the devastation, and, you know, I wouldn't be telling the truth if I didn't tell you it was a concern. And I didn't know much about Coach Payton at the time. So, you know, I was a little concerned, but the meeting went well, and they wanted me to sign before I left, but my agent told me, no, get on the plane and go to D.C. So I ended up leaving straight from New Orleans and going straight to D.C. for that visit. You know, met with those coaches there. I think, at the time, Joe Gibbs was the coach with the Redskins, and it's funny now because my oldest son and his grandson go to school together. But I, I just felt a better connection with Doug, Coach Payton, and Terry Malone. You know, I just, you know, they made me believers. It's just like, you know, a lot of the guys that came in with that 06 free agent class, you know, Coach Payton and, you know, Mickey Loomis and everybody, they did a great job of making us see what their vision was. And, you know, I think they, over the last, what has been almost, 14, 15 years, I think they've proven that their vision was a great vision, and they've done a great job of executing and turning the Saints into a perennial contender.
Well, I mean, okay, so you look at your career though, and I think a lot of Saints fans don't realize this, or maybe they don't remember, but as big of a Saints legend as you were, and as many of these iconic games where you were the starting center for the Saints, you were a backup for 2 years. You didn't play much. You got a couple spot starts the second year you were there, but you really, and I kind of forgot this. I mean, looking back at the lineup of that 2006 game, Jeff Fain was the center. I mean, he was a very good center, and there were not a lot of injuries. When you look at Jamar Nesbitt and Jari Evans, I mean, they were durable guys. And so you didn't get a ton of playing time until your third year. And so it really took you some time to, show your value and your worth, and that you were trustworthy through a couple training camps and preseason and just little spots here and there where you can play. So maybe just talk a little bit about kind of that where you were in 2006 and around that time mentally, and what it took to kind of get to a point where you eventually became the player you were.
Yeah. It's funny about me not, you know, starting in 2006. Last night watching the game, my wife was like, babe, why aren't you in the game? I was like, you don't remember? I didn't start the first 2 years or so. But, you know, when I came in as a free agent, you know, truthfully, you know, I was coming in as the my last year in New York, I was the backup center guard. You know, I was drafted as a guard in New York, and but I really only played center like maybe twice in a game. So when I got to New Orleans, I was still kind of still learning the position and building up confidence in the position. And then, you know, the Saints ended up acquiring Jeff, which, like you said, Jeff was a great center also. So, you know, I was blessed. In New York, I got to play behind Kevin Mawai, so I got to learn from him. And then when I came to New Orleans, I got those couple years to, you know, learn from Jeff. And one thing about that I really learned from Jeff was, you know, how passionate he played the game and how just his will. That was something I really picked up. And Kevin was the same way in New York. So, you know, I was blessed to be able to observe two great centers, in my opinion. And, you know, that was really beneficial for me. So, you know, I just kept working, kept plugging away. And then, you know, in 07, I know Jeff got hurt and I got to start a couple games and played well. And then I think that really, you know, let Doug and the coaching staff and everybody in the organization know that they, you know, that I could handle the center position.
Yeah, it's crazy when you think about so many Saints. You know, a lot of times it's just getting the opportunity.
That's the thing about the NFL, you know. Yeah, it's, you know, some situations, you know, you need to be able to prove yourself. And fortunately, when I got that opportunity to prove that at center, I was able to. You know, I was drafted as a guard, but, you know, I wish I had started playing the center position a lot earlier in my career.
Jonathan, I wanted to ask you, the Saints players on the 2016, like Fujita and other ones, have told stories about how just brutal that camp was. Do you have any memories of that 2006 training camp?
Yeah, everything you've heard about it is true. It's by far the worst experience I've ever had in football, especially in a training camp venue.
Wow.
You know, just the heat, the daily, you know, we were pretty much in pads for almost 5 weeks straight. And, you know, as a football player, you know, we're always complaining about having to be in pads and working. But, you know, somehow, some way, we always go out there and get the job done. But that camp really set the tone, I think, for the organization. And Coach Payton had a vision. And, you know, us going away, you know, kind of being away from everything and, you know, having to work like that, I think he kind of, you know, found out who was going to buy in and who wasn't. And it kind of, you know, was a key moment for the organization. But, you know, I still to this day sometimes wonder, you know, how did we make it through that camp?
Did you guys feel like 2006, because as fans, me and Andrew have talked about it, the team, y'all didn't look good at all in the preseason. And at times we were like, oh my God, this is not looking great. How did the team feel coming out of camp?
You know, I can't say, you know, we actually, I don't remember, you know, us really talking about it amongst each other, but I do, you know, I do think, you know, in my mind, you know, I kind of wonder, you know, the preseason game against Dallas, here it is. I believe that was the third, or was it, it was Dallas or
it was Dallas, Dallas, yeah.
Indianapolis. Where we didn't have a really good preseason game. So, yeah, to coming out of the preseason, I can't say we necessarily felt confident. But then you go to Cleveland, you win, okay. But then I think the second week we went to Green Bay and won in Green Bay. So I think, you know, that kind of showed us a lot. And, you know, obviously back then, you know, we knew Drew was a good quarterback, but – when you know, he turned out to be a great quarterback. When you have a great quarterback, if you can protect him and, you know, get somewhat of a little bit of running game, you got a shot. And I think that is really what happened, you know, confidence after those first games. And then obviously we come back to the Dome against Atlanta, you know, and obviously we were going to do everything in our power to take care of business. Even watching the game last night, that offense is it doesn't look like the offense we see today. So I think we were still evolving, and, you know, we just, you know, Coach Payton just kept evolving the offense. And now you see, you know, his vision coming to fruition.
Well, let's talk about that game, Goody. So I've been to many Saints games over the course of my life that were really loud. I mean, I Saints Bears, when the Saints were 7-0 in the Moore era and Morton Anderson hits a 60-yard field goal, I remember it being deafening then. Hakeem drops the ball in the first playoff win in 2000. I was at that game too. That was very loud. And I was there for 2009 NFC Championship. That was extremely loud. But I was also at the Gleason game, and I, in my experience, you know, going to Saints games all my life, every season, I would say that the Gleason game for me was the loudest it ever was. Would you agree with that as a player?
Yeah, I agree. I think with the emotion of the city that night, you know, everybody was passionate about the game, and just, you know, with everything that the organization and the fans and the whole state of Louisiana went through, the I think, you know, it was just one night to let loose. And people ask me all the time what it's like to play in the Superdome. And I tell them all the time, when things are going well, it's like a big party. So, if you know, New Orleans is known for, you know, having good parties. And, you know, I think, you know, people always talk about they got the best fans. But, you know, I don't know of any – I don't believe any other fan base is this – passionate about their team as the
Jonathan world. Thomas Morstead said, told us last week, he said he misses kicking off because it's his favorite thing to do is to kick off after the Saints score a touchdown because the Superdome is loud and drunk and everyone is dancing, and he misses it tremendously.
Yeah, it's an experience, you know. I can't remember what year they started playing the Yin Yang Twins song, but it seems like after that started, it just – It got even more amazing. So it's an experience like no other. You know, it almost has a little bit of a maybe like a almost like a college feel to it, where the fans seem so much more invested than the, you know. I've played in just about every pro stadium, but I think no stadium has anything on the Superdome.
Well, you've experienced Michigan, so if you're saying that, it's that's a testament. And you know, for you Saints fans that didn't know, actually Goody played with Tom Brady in Michigan, so you've played with some good quarterbacks. But Jonathan, I guess before I let you get out, kind of a parting thought that I just wanted to get from you is, you know, obviously in that game, you weren't in New Orleans during Katrina, but I mean, at the time, I mean, even during that game, New Orleans was still very much in a state of disarray and repair. But at that point, I mean, you were just kind of a backup offensive lineman, just trying to make it in your career, and you weren't established yet. And I mean, looking back now, You're a beloved member of the New Orleans community. You're a Saints legend. You know, at the time during that game, you look at players like Deuce McAllister. I mean, he was established. He had been there for a long time. But since then, you've made a Pro Bowl. You've won a Super Bowl. You left. You came back. I guess now, like, looking back on that moment, has that changed your perspective at all? Or do you look at it differently than maybe when you were going through it?
Yeah. I mean, even if you look at that whole 06 class, free agent class, a lot of us, you know, were a big bunch of question marks at that time. So, you know, I think that's another special thing about it. We all got there. We knew our situations, you know, weren't guaranteed. And, you know, we just worked. You know, it's definitely coming down to New Orleans and, you know, leaving New York, I think, was the best decision of my career. And signing with the Saints, you know, it was definitely the best decision of my career. And, you know, I'm thankful for it. I'm glad I was able to make the right decision. And it's something that I'm a decision I'll never regret. And I'm glad I made it. And, you know, New Orleans would always be a special place to me. And, you know, I'm just blessed and glad I was able to be a part of it.
All right, Jonathan. Well, we appreciate the time given us today, and stay safe out there, and I'm sure we'll talk to you down the line, hopefully, when football hopefully starts in the fall on time.
All right. Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me, and you all stay safe, and look to talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Goody.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, everybody. We talked to Jonathan Goodwin about the 2006 Saints-Falcons game. But now we're joined again by a friend of the show, Mike Carney. And Mike, your perspective on 2006, I think, is really interesting because you were one of the mainstays of the team, but you were a holdover from 2005, and you sort of completely understood the experience of practicing in a parking lot and then going back to the Superdome. So what was that sort of like for you?
Oh, man, it was, I think you guys have seen the picture. I mean, that's why I was so emotional that night. You know, it all kind of came to a head, just all the emotion. And it was everything you remember from that 2005 year, you know, as far as packing up, heading out to California to play our last game against Oakland in the preseason 05, and seeing homes and people boarding up their houses and, you know, one-way traffic out of town going west, no one going downtown. It was just surreal. And then to find out that, you know, our flight was like the last flight out of the airport that day. And then to land and then see the devastation, turn on the TV and you get in the hotel room and be like, oh, my gosh. Like, it's just something that you never would imagine going through. And then, like you mentioned, you know, not knowing where we were going to be, you know, after that game. And when we fly to San Antonio and then, you know, it's just up in the air. We had no idea. Then we find out we're going to stay in San Antonio. And then we just, you know, make our home out of the Alamo Dome. And then, you know, I think we moved out of the Alamo Dome probably five or six times because there was events that came in and we'd have to move out and then moved back in. I mean, I remember practicing at in a parking lot. I remember practicing at a high school field. I mean, we practiced one place, but had to get dressed at another place. And then, you know, every game was pretty much a road game. I mean, we played three home games in the Alamo Dome there. We played some in Baton Rouge. And then we played that one game in New York that was supposed to be a quote unquote home game. But every game just felt like we were on the road. And, you know, we were at a disadvantage, and we had a pretty good team that year. We came out.
How did y'all win three games?
The week one. Yeah. We came out and beat Carolina week one. Yeah. But anyway, so just all of those, I mean, I remember that year probably better than any year in the National Football League 2005. And I think, you know, rewatching last night's game, it just brought back all those emotions and just things that, you know, not just what we went through as a team, guys, but what you guys went through, all your families went through, all the people of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, what they all went through. And then, you know, to come back and to be able to do it like we did that night was just so special.
Yeah, well, we talked to Goodwin, and, you know, he was a free agent. So, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, in 06, you know, they were there for the first time. There were so much. I mean, there are very few guys that remained from that team like you and Deuce and Joe Horn. But, I mean, you mentioned that picture with you and Ernie Conwell. And I mean, man, every time I look at that, I get goosebumps because it's just – It really is an iconic picture because you're this beast of a man. I mean, you're a fullback, the most powerful player, but and yet you're just brought, you're overcome with emotion, and it's such a powerful picture. Do you remember that moment? And do you remember maybe what Ernie Conwell told you?
You know what? I do. I mean, I remember he just put his arm around me, just saying, "It's okay, man. We're okay. Like, you know, we won and I love you." He knew I was having a moment, you know, Ernie and I have a history together. Ernie and I are from the same hometown. We're about 10 years apart. We both went to the same high school. We both played for the same high school coach. And he was kind of like that guy at your school, right? That you kind of dreamed of being like, you know, he's the first guy to make it to the NFL from our high school. So, you know, so you add Katrina in 2005, you add the reopening of the dome, you add in winning the game, and then you add in, I'm looking at a guy that I idolized growing up, you know, from my hometown. And emotions just overcame me. And I remember sitting there, and then he just kind of, he scooted over to me because he saw me losing it. And it really was uncontrollable. I remember Coach Bonamago, the special teams coach, coming up to me, giving me a slap of the head and just, you know, saying you love me out, you know. And then I remember in the locker room after, I just still uncontrollable. You know, I couldn't control my emotions and coaches talking. And I think I posted that video last night as well, just completely losing it. A lot of people want to know what was it? Why, what were you crying about? Was it about the moment or something else? It was completely about the moment. It was not about anything else. It was just a bunch of raw emotions coming out that I really couldn't stop.
Mike, was there a sense in going into that game that, because I know y'all had won the first two games, so you were obviously feeling good. Mm-hmm. Was there a sense early in that game that y'all were like, this is our night. We're Atlanta. You guys got no shot. We're the Globetrotters, and you are the Generals tonight. Was there that sense early?
Yeah, we had that focus all week. You know, we practiced in the Superdome twice that week just to get used to the being back in there. Get a feel for the turf and all that stuff. And I would say, you know, there's a lot of tension, not bad tension. There was positive tension, but there was tension because we wanted to win the game so bad for the people and for the city and for the fans. I think there was more pressure for that us to win that game than any other game that year, to be honest with you. And, you know, we knew walking out, seeing that the stadium was completely full during pregame, and then seeing some old teammates like Wayne Gandy was on a teammate of mine who you guys know played for the Saints.
Yeah.
He was on the Falcons that team that year. Ashley Ambrose was like an assistant at that time for the DBs. You know, he was a coach helping out. I mean, we saw some of these old faces during pregame, and their eyes were wide. They knew that the Atlanta Falcons knew that they were there just to show up. And that this was not going to be their night. And you rewatch that game last night, guys. Algie Crumpler drops a touchdown pass. Michael Jenkins, I mean, he drops a touchdown pass. Obviously, they call offensive pass interference. There's so many things in that game that happen. You know, the sack fumble by Vic early that should have been a scoop and score by Brian Scott, but it goes out of bounds. And the next play, Steve Gleason blocks the punt around the world. There's so many instances in that game, guys, that you go, wow, this was meant to be. This was what it was supposed to – this is how it was all supposed to play out and how great it was to do it the way we did it.
Well, yeah, I remember meeting you for the first time, Mike, that year. It was still in training camp, so it was before the regular season started.
Oh,
but
Lord.
I remember you were at Whole Foods, and I ran into you at Whole Foods. And at this point, I'm like a 25-year-old, so I'm like, yeah, it was the coolest thing ever to meet a Saints player. And
was I nice?
You were so nice. I mean, approachable. You actually stopped and took like a good 5 minutes to just chat, which was great. But I remember asking you, I was like, hey, I want to meet Saints players. Like, where do you guys go out and party? And I remember telling me, go to Republic. You'll find a Saints player there. So I went there that night, and sure enough, Reggie Bush was there, and I got to meet him because of you. So thanks for that.
Yeah, Republic or Fox and the Hound right there.
That's right. Yeah, those were the spots. But no, I mean, I'm with you. Like, watching the game, you know, what's crazy is it really does feel like two eras, because you look at all, there's so many Saints icons in that game. And I mean, you look at the legends from the Hazlitt era. I mean, you had Deuce, you had, Steve Gleason,
Will
you
Smith.
Had Joe Horn. But then, you know, you also had guys that weren't even that would become great, but weren't even like Lance Moore, Jonathan Goodwin, Zach Streif.
Yeah.
Like, those were young guys that just hadn't really, they were just backups, you know? And then you had guys that had just been signed, like Drew and Scott Fujita and that Scott Shanley, guys that were there for the first year that were established starters, but that the legend really kind of started with that year. So many different personalities from different eras. Can you maybe just talk about that group and what, just watching that game, the memories that came back from that?
Yeah, we just, you know what, you mentioned all those great names. I mean, I don't think a lot of people remember, maybe some do. Lance Moore was on the practice squad in 05. So he actually went through the Katrina. He was in San Antonio with us. He was on practice squad though. He wasn't playing any games. So he kind of has a sense of what it was like. I mean, he wasn't having to get on the plane every week and fly and do all that stuff. But he was there. You know, he always became more of a centerpiece of the team in 06, obviously. But it was just the right mix of guys. They, you know, the front office and Sean did a great job bringing in. Like, you look at Mark Simonelli, you look at Shanley, Fujita. They're all just lunch pail guys. Hollis Thomas, right? Huge comedian, the funniest guy in the locker room. But the guy was a hard worker. The guy was a football player, and he was a lunch pail guy. And it was just the perfect concoction of guys. I mean, it was perfect mix of the type of hard work, old school guys. It was, you know, the like you said, the Hazlitt guys that are lunch pail, old school, versus, you know, with the new guys brought in. You know, those 06 guys that came in from free agency that were added after, you know, they got it. They understood it. They embraced it. And that was made it even better. You know, because sometimes you worry in pro sports that, you know, the new mix of guys is not going to go with the old mix. And so I thought that they did a great job of front office and Sean did a great job of understanding who were those lunch pail, who were those football guys, the good guys from you know, the previous regime, hold over that we can hold over, that can mix with the guys I believe are that same type of player. And, you know, you watch the game last night and it just gives you, it just totally, for me, goes, wow, man, look at Simino, look at Shanley, look at Fujita, the way he played last night. I mean, that was the way I forgot how great he played last night in that game. And then, you know, you see, you know, young guys like Roman Harper stepping up as a rookie. I mean, he played last night. I'm thinking I had to recheck the screen, you know, when his profile came that he was a rookie. He was playing like a 10-year vet last night. So we just had a great group of guys that really understood, you know, what we were trying to do. We were trying to change the culture. We were trying to bring hope. We were trying to bring, you know, just something back to the city that, that you guys could be proud of. And I think that we did do that that year, which obviously I believe that culture change in 06 is what propelled that, you know, that city to finally, and that team to win their first Super Bowl.
You know, Mike, with Sean Payton, the interesting thing is watching it, you can see in 06 how the offense sort of evolved. But the question I have for you is, you know, with Sean Payton and Drew Brees, when did you as a player sort of realize, man, we got Drew and we got Sean, and that combination is just smarter and better than you? And when did it become apparent to you how special it was in 06?
Probably, you know, I would say probably, you know, you felt it building, you felt it brewing throughout, you know, training camp, and then those first three games. But I would say, you know, that San Francisco game, and then we roll into Dallas. I mean, just we really started to gel as an offense, and you could really tell that Sean and Drew were really building that special relationship, you know, head coach, play caller to quarterback, that you know, that we're still seeing today. I mean, I'm not surprised by, you know, what they've been able to accomplish together. It's the Bill Walsh, Joe Montana remake, in my opinion. And it's better in so many different ways because of where they're doing it. But yeah, that year, I mean, you could see that the young, bright mind, a guy that really knew how to put all the pieces together. You even watched last night's game. Like my boys kept going, "Hey, why isn't Drew throwing the ball, Dad?" I'm like, "Hey, man," and I'm like, you know, I got the ball every once in a while, but you know, last night that wasn't a part of Dad's role. You know, Dad was a blocker last night, and that's just to everyone else. You know, there's, but you just see all the different, you know, little nuances, and you saw all the, you know, different personnel groups, and so Sean had and continues to have a great, you know, just a unbelievable way to kind of make everyone work, and he window dresses a lot. You know, you saw last night a lot of that fly motion with Reggie going around the back end, and then we hand the ball off to Deuce, and Deuce runs one for like 12 yards, 15 yards. So those are just things that he was able to do. And then with Drew's intelligence and ability to see defenses pre-snap and make the adjustments and make the checks, is, you know, you guys are obviously still witnessing that today.
But watching the game, I will say, I was a little surprised to see such a commitment to the run, like just to see Reggie and Deuce get so many carries. And because, you know, you look at the offense now, and I've seen those games where the Saints are up 20-3 at halftime, and that, to see him kick it inside the five, you know, just make it 20. That was surprising. I know that he's going for that these days. And
yeah, he's definitely going for that. It's a much more seasoned and mature Sean Payton than he saw last night.
So is that just like so what's the difference there? Is it just like a confidence with Drew that like has developed, or was it the game plan that night, or what's the difference?
Yeah. You know, when you look at last night, you know, first year as him being a head coach, right, and a play caller with a bunch of new guys, we had Marcus Colson, a rookie, right? We had Devery Henderson, who was in his third year, but really that was his first year playing. Right, he was inactive in his rookie year, and he barely played at all in 05. So you had a lot of guys. You had Reggie Bush as a rookie. You had Deuce coming off an ACL, right? You had me last night coming off a calf. I tore my calf week one, sat out week two, fought my way back to play in that game. Was not going to miss that game.
Well, hold on. You were playing with a torn calf in that game?
Yes.
Wow.
So week one, I tore my calf in Cleveland. I tore my gastroc, and they told me I was going to be out for up to a month. I think it was 4 to 6 weeks. I said, no way that happened. So I sat out 10 days, and I was back, and I played. So I played last night with basically one leg with a sleeve on and a bunch of Flexol. And I remember throughout the game, and I there's certain instances. Even my wife last night goes, "Why are you limping?" I go, "Because I tore my calf." Remember, she's like, "Oh my gosh." And I remember last night, there's certain instances, there's certain plays where I reached down towards it because I've felt it re-tear a couple times during that game, in that game. So I was being kind of eased in back into the offense. So you had all these different variables, is what I'm trying to tell you. You look at last night, and so I think he was just, you know, at that time, that's kind of where the game was. You know, you kicked the ball, you got points. where now, you know, Sean and Drew have been together for so long that he has so much confidence that Drew can get the job done, which he does pretty much every time on fourth down. That just wasn't the case. You know, just a younger and just a different time and all those variables that I just mentioned about the offense and all the players that were involved.
Yeah, I was going to ask you why Mark Campbell was playing fullback on a couple of snaps. Now
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, that's why he was mixed in. He hated it. I mean, I remember in Green Bay, him and Ernie Conwell had to play fullback, and they would come off and be like, "Hey man, when are you coming back?" You know, they absolutely hated it. But yeah. So I, you know, once again, I wasn't even supposed to be back for that game, but I found a way to get myself back to the game. I was not going to miss that game.
You were in a lot of iconic Saints games, and I asked the same question to Jonathan Goodwin. Do you feel like this was the loudest the Superdome ever was?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I wasn't there for the NFC Championship, you know, kick to beat the Vikings to go to the Super Bowl. So I can't speak for that game. I don't know if that game was louder. But I was there for the divisional game against the Eagles. And it was louder than that. I think if you were to ask the Falcons, especially the offense, they would tell you that they had a hard time getting off the ball. It was a definite advantage. You guys know this for a defensive front when you know the offensive, you know, line and the quarterbacks they're all going to have a hard time communicating to the receivers and. You know, for the old line getting off the ball to snap, you as a D line, you have a jump. But our D line was another component to last night, you know, that I saw that, man, they play out of their mind. But they were that extra advantage of the sound allows the D line to get an extra jump, you know, and it causes problems. And you saw that last night as well.
Yeah, that was, I was going to say, another one of the guys that you talked about was sort of a foundation kind of, and a glue guy was Brian Young. He was just a guy who.
Oh my gosh, Brian Young. Yeah,
you know?
I mean, Joe Theismann kept calling him Bryant Young. Bryant Young was the great.
The 49ers.
Niners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian Young was people. I mean, he was kind of like the lost. He was like the heart and soul, man. Brian Young was such a great player. God, he was a great player, and you guys saw that last night. I mean, Brian Young was another lunch pail guy, and you know. Not surprised he's still on the staff. You know, he's still there coaching, you know.
Yeah. So, Mike, before we get out of here, how are you surviving the quarantine, corona? How are you surviving being cooped up in your house? Are you avoiding going stir crazy?
You know what, man? Here's my deal. I'm a JOMO guy anyway. I'm a joy of missing out. You know, most people are fear of missing out, FOMO, right? So my daily routine is hasn't really changed from – what I normally do anyways with this quarantine. Difference is kids are home, we're having a homeschool, and you know, they can get crazy. They're running around in circles in between their Zoom classes and going, "Hey, you're not being able to do this in class." So, I mean, you end up being kind of the principal, the referee, you know, to get them kind of back on track. But I got a gym in my garage. I can go in my garage and work out. You know, we have a nice neighborhood I can run around. And unfortunately this week we have a lot of rain, so you can't get outside much, but it hasn't been that bad. Watching a lot of movies, you know, wrestling with the boys, you know, staying busy that way. But, you know, hopefully this thing can come to an end soon just so we can get back to our regular lives. I know we're all probably fighting the same fight.
If we don't have football, my story is no different
than anybody else's. But
if we don't have football, it is what it is. I think America's going to freak out.
I think they need to play more games. They need to re-air more football games. I mean, I had more people blowing me up last night than I feel like I was still playing. You know, so it's amazing what football does for people, right? I mean,
yeah,
takes people's minds off of things.
Yeah, it was great. New Orleans treated it like a game day. They told kids on their Zoom classes to make it a black and gold day. The Saints treated it like a game day. Media was treating it like game day, like an hour before. They're like, the inactives are this. And WWL played the radio broadcast. It was fantastic. I'm curious to see the ratings of the game in New Orleans. I wonder how many people watched.
That's funny you say that because I asked my wife last night. I go, I wonder what the ratings for this game will be. I'd be curious to find that out myself.
I mean, if they're really good, you have to wonder if at some point ESPN says, hey, if we really care about our ratings, maybe we should be playing Saints games every Monday night during this quarantine.
Right, right, right. I don't know if they'll do that if only the Gulf Coast has the highest ratings.
Yeah.
Right?
They've been playing some great stuff, though. I mean, hopefully they just don't play any bad moments for the Saints. But, Mike, thanks for joining us, guy.
They're definitely they're only going to play the ones with the highest ratings. Yeah. No blowout games. You're not going to see that. You're going to see what we saw last night.
No horrible Saints games. No 2017 Minnesota.
Didn't NBC Sports do one of the Saints Chargers from 12 or 13?
Yeah.
The night Drew they did one, so the other networks are airing Saints games too.
Yeah, that game was surreal to watch, to have Sean Payton on the sideline and the Saints having an interim coach. And
right. Right. A little weird.
A little. The further you get away from it, the more weird it is, Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Sunday Night Football should be re-airing some of their better games. I mean, maybe other networks might start taking note, from last night. But we'll see.
I love it. Mike, thanks for joining us, guys. You can find Mike on Twitter. Mike, we appreciate you joining us. Guys, everybody out there, stay safe and be well. And we will see you again tomorrow.